Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. This week, Jay-Z in court over crappy, lazy perfume launch. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
As ever, we are going to be taking a look back at some of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the last week. A week when Big Sean confirmed that he'd left Kanye West's Good Music label in order to get a bigger cut of revenues generated by his music. West countered that by saying that signing him was the worst thing he'd ever done. I mean, it wasn't even the worst thing he's done in the last week.
Well, he didn't sign Big Sean in the last week, so...
I suppose so. Fair enough, he's got a get out. But he's done some quite bad things since then.
We know all of this, firstly, because it was Big Sean's fans who noticed that when he put a new track out, that it was not credited to Good Music, but instead to Def Jam. I mean, it's all ultimately part of Universal Music, isn't it? But then it looked like he's now got his own vanity imprint on Universal.
Yeah, it was credited directly to a label called FF to Def, which is an imprint of Def Jam, which is an imprint of Universal. Good Music is also an imprint of Universal, so he's moved just to a different office, pretty much. But he has been with Good Music his entire recording career, basically discovered by Kanye. And so while he's not the only artist to leave Good Music in recent years, it is a pretty big deal that he's gone.
Yeah, so Big Sean's fans saw that track being released, saw that the labels associated with it were new, didn't mention Good Music. So they then said to Big Sean on social, are you not part of Good Music anymore? And he confirmed, nope, I've left Kanye's label, basically saying that he wanted a bigger cut of the pie. Obviously, kind of ironic, because last year Kanye West was laying into unfair record deals that don't give artists a big enough cut of the pie. And then there was chatter at the time to the effect that that's a bit hypocritical on Kanye's part because Big Sean's deal with Good Music was a pretty rubbish deal. But he's out of that deal now. We had that confirmed on social media. And then Kanye was on a podcast and was asked about it.
Yeah, he was on the Drink Champs podcast and he said a lot of things, because it was a 2.5 hour interview, but specific to Big Sean leaving his label, he said it was the worst thing I've ever done by signing Big Sean, which is it's quite a big thing to say, particularly having worked with someone for so long. That said, it's not the first time Kanye's been down on his label. He did say, I mean, about the time he signed Big Sean, he said setting up the label at all was one of the worst things he'd ever done. So clearly... he's been harbouring these ideas for some time.
Although, you did get the impression that his beef with Big Sean was as much about Big Sean not backing his presidential bid last year when, if you remember, he ran for president of the US and he was sort of saying, oh, Big Sean and John Legend, another person who used to be signed to Good Music, were supporting the Democrats. It was almost as if that was where the beef was coming from as much as Big Sean quitting the label. Who knows? Because if we're being honest, neither of us actually listened to the entire podcast because, as you've just mentioned, it's 2.5 hours long.
Yes, have not yet had time to go through all of that, but have read the highlights of it. And yeah, it's quite something. He says a lot of things in there.
We can confirm that this podcast is not 2.5 hours long. So that means we have to stop talking about the Kanye interview because it would probably take us 2.5 hours to talk about it. And we don't have 2.5 hours on set list. So that is not what we're talking about this week. So what are we talking about this week?
Later on, we'll be discussing the call for urgent action on the post-Brexit shambles for UK touring artists. I mean, it's a long... you would be right in saying the time for urgent action has long since passed. But anyway, we're going to discuss the latest development on all of that. But first, hey, it's another person who Kanye West has or previously had. I can't remember the current status of it, but there has been a feud between him and Jay-Z. But this was not a feud between Kanye and Jay-Z. This is another ongoing feud between Jay-Z and the perfume company Parlux. Now, you may remember that Parlux sued Jay-Z in 2016, claiming that he had failed to keep up his side of an agreement to promote a perfume branded with his name. That case has finally got to court, and Jay-Z was in the stand giving evidence, which was quite entertaining. I mean, long story short, he says it wasn't his fault. The perfume failed because of Parlux's crappy, lazy work.
Yeah, so anybody who has ever been to any of my workshops or lectures about music rights and how artists make money out of their intellectual property, you might remember the thing I always say is, any artist, surely your ultimate game as a music maker, as a songwriter, as a producer, as a performer, the ultimate objective of any artist business, surely, is the perfume deal.
Oh, yeah.
Because for big name artists, these are hugely lucrative deals. So artist builds a brand around their music. You protect that brand through trademark. And then other companies want to use your brand, license your trademark to use on their products. But I think the perfume deals are the really mega bucks deals, partly because, as I say in those lectures and workshops, we all know perfume is a nonsense product. It's just some smelly water in a bottle. It costs nothing to produce. But if you put a pop star's brand on the side of the bottle, actually, the example I usually use in my lectures and workshops isn't Jay-Z, it's Beyonce. Because somebody once told me just how much money Beyonce made from one of her perfume deals. In fact, that person told me, I never fact-checked this. It may be right, it may be wrong. But it was somebody who negotiated deals like this for a living. And he reckoned that one of the years when Beyonce did one of her big perfume deals, this is probably maybe even 10 years ago now, the year she did the perfume deal made more money for her than everything else she did that year. So her recordings and her live activity and her sponsorship activity, she made more money on her perfume deal. So for pop stars, perfume deals or a big deal, if that's something you want to do and if you're, you know, wanting to make as much money as you can. But the lesson here is, yes, there's a lot of money to be made out of these perfume deals, but they don't always go to plan.
No. Well, you can see why Jay-Z might have wanted to get into the perfume business, given how successful his wife has been in it. And in 2013, it was announced that him and Parlux were going to launch Gold Jay-Z, a premium perfume with Jay-Z's name slapped on the side of it. It was going to do big things in the pop perfume world, but it never did. Parlux reckoned the reason it didn't do anything was because Jay-Z, despite being contractually required to, did not promote the perfume, and therefore his fans didn't care to go and buy it. His position, on the other hand, has generally not really been known. What we've mainly reported on in this case, and the reason it's taken so long to get to court, is that he and his lawyers have really tried to put roadblocks in the way of this case the whole way along. That's been what they've been doing, rather than saying what their defence is. There was a long time spent talking about access to Jay-Z's work diary. His legal team did not want to give up access to that, to show all, you know, all of everything that he was doing around the time he should have been promoting this perfume. They also didn't want his deposition recorded. They didn't want him to have to go to court in person at all. And there was a whole thing over some deleted emails. Ultimately, they failed in their fight, and Jay-Z did have to get up in court and testify in person, the second day of which happened last week. And it was very entertaining. And I'm very glad that he did have to do it.
It was one of the, I mean, regular listeners of Setlist will know, we follow events in what we sometimes refer to as the pop courts very closely at CMU and Setlist. And this was one of the more entertaining depositions. Jay-Z and the legal representative for Parlux sparring in an entertaining fashion and quite a punchy fashion. And it was interesting because he was in court on two separate days. They hoped they would get this testimony done in one day, but it was so entertaining, everyone wanted it to carry on. So
in the end,
it was 2 days of testimony on a Friday and a Monday, in the middle of which Jay-Z was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So it was kind of interesting.
Busy weekend.
Well, He gave a quite an interesting speech as he was inducted to the Hall of Fame. Obama was on hand to big up Jay-Z as part of that. So that was all happening over the weekend. And then sort of bookending that, we had this testimony. Yeah, and as you say, whereas in the very long-running run-up to this case, most of what we got from the Jay-Z side was about technicalities, as you say, access to diary, emails. Oh, and then there was, you know, when there was a discussion about whether or not Jay-Z should testify in person, there was also a conversation about whether the former CEO of Parlux should also testify in person. Obviously, in the context of COVID, lots of court cases in the last 18 months have been having people doing their testimonies over Zoom. And so it was proposed that maybe both the former Parlux boss and Jay-Z could testify digitally, remotely. And it was very clear that the judge overseeing the case didn't really want that to happen. And well done to the judge, because I don't think the Jay-Z testimony would have been as entertaining had it been done remotely. But then the last little technicality before we actually got the court hearing was the Parlux side were saying that their former CEO was very COVID cautious and that he wasn't going into public spaces, that he'd basically been confined to his home ever since the pandemic began. And then Jay-Z's side got a private investigator to follow to follow the guy who apparently was stomping around New York and going to events and restaurants and traveling on public transport. So that was the last entertaining distraction before we got to the actual court case. But as you say, once Jay-Z was in the stand, it became very much, okay, Parlux reckoned this partnership didn't work because Jay-Z just didn't do what he said he was going to do and what he was contractually obliged to do. Whereas Jay-Z's position was, no, the reason this didn't work was because your marketing team were useless. All of your ideas were terrible. And when I didn't want to take part in some of the things that you organized, that wasn't because I was being awkward. It was simply because what you had organized was completely wrong for a prestigious perfume brand badged with the brand of a superstar artist like me. You didn't know what you were doing. And that's why I wasn't very helpful. And that's why this whole thing went horribly wrong. It's basically a summary of Jay-Z's argument on the stand. And I have to say, from what I can see, we don't yet know what the judgment is going to be in this case. But it definitely sounded like the jury were enjoying the sparring.
Well, a lot of what happened was reading out Jay-Z's emails from the time to prove that him deciding their work was crap is not something he's decided, you know, later in the day. At the time, he was emailing people saying things like, the partners on this suck, and that sort of thing. At the time, he was quite clear on the fact that he didn't like what they were doing, possibly fairly. You know, one of the things they did was negotiate a deal to have the perfume placed in the Superdrug chain of pharmacies. And for listeners outside the UK, I don't know. I don't know how far Superdrug spreads, but so that might not mean anything. But let's just say, I mean, if you've ever looked at any of Jay-Z's brand partnerships, he tends to try to work on high-end products. He wants to maintain this image that he is a wealthy guy who has expensive tastes and wants to sell expensive things. And Superdrug is not a place where anyone would do that.
It is a bit budget for a Jay-Z perfume, it has to be said. But it wasn't just the retail partners in the UK that he objected to back when this perfume was being launched. There was an ad which then got shown in court. Actually, this was when Jay-Z's own lawyer was doing the questioning, and Jay-Z called the advert a B-rate commercial that had his name on it, and apparently he reluctantly approved for the commercial to go out at the very last minute, but only because there wasn't really any other options. And then in terms of his sparring with the other side's lawyer, at one point the lawyer was saying, well, apparently Parlux had booked an appearance on Good Morning America around about the launch, and then Jay-Z decided not to do that, and that was one of the examples that the Parlux side were giving in order to say, see, our marketing team were working hard and then you weren't doing the things. And then Jay-Z was like, well, hang on a second. Yes, I was contractually obliged to do some promo, but I wasn't contractually obliged to do specific promo in the week of launch. Isn't that right? And then the lawyer from the other side, the Parlux lawyer, was basically saying, I'm here to ask the questions, not you. And then there was another bit on the second day where Jay-Z was basically saying, well, these emails that you've been showing, the ones where I say this whole thing sucks, those emails answer your own questions. Why don't you just pull out the emails? And he was basically saying you pull out old emails when it suits you, but you don't when it doesn't. And he was accusing the lawyer of playing with words and employing devious tricks to try and trip him up.
Yeah, where he called that advert a B-rate commercial. In court, after the email had been read out, he just said, I was being kind. So, I mean, maybe it does help to have him there giving even stronger critiques of that work.
Elsewhere in the proceedings, again, I think this was when actually he was being questioned by his own lawyer, but it was basically raised, well, given we know that you weren't happy with the marketing of this product back when it was being launched, that you thought it sucked, you thought it was lazy, maybe that does suggest that you gave up on this project and you wrote it off too soon and therefore you didn't do what you were meant to be doing. But he denied that. He said, yes, he thought Parlux's marketing work was shoddy and no good. He had creative differences with Parlux. He wasn't happy. But he said that didn't mean that he went out of his way to make the product fail and to sort of, you know, ensure that the launch didn't go ahead as planned, because he basically said, despite all of his creative differences with Parlux, at the end of the day, this perfume had his brand on it. It, you know, it had Jay-Z on the side of the bottle, so it wasn't really in his interest to force the whole thing to fail. I would never cut off my nose to spite my face, he told the court.
Another thing that came up in this questioning was that Parlux had basically been using Jay-Z's brand and changing things in a way that he and his team weren't happy with. There was one email where a member of his team said, Parlux is out of control, they are rogue. And Parlux's lawyer said, well, if that was the case, why didn't you sue them? If they were doing all this stuff and playing with your brand in a way you weren't happy with, why didn't you take them to court before they took you to court? Now, he has actually sued them, although that did come after their original lawsuit in 2016. So he sued for unpaid royalties. But why not go legal sooner if Parlux was indeed going rogue? He said, I don't typically sue people, but in this case, I'll make a special exception. And I hope you're the lawyer. And I think that really sums up the rocky relationship that Jay-Z formed with Parlux's lawyer throughout this. They had various back and forth where Jay-Z was visibly annoyed with him. And as you say, at one point, he was accusing this lawyer, Anthony Viola, of playing lawyer tricks and playing word games. At one point, he even turned around to the judge and just said, is this even allowed? They didn't get on. And so the fact that Jay-Z wants to see him again in court, at least suggests that Jay-Z might be back in court giving another fun testimony.
That would be good. I think we can all agree that every time Jay-Z's in court, not that it happens that often, but yes, it would be good to have this lawyer in there because it was very entertaining. In fact, once all of this is done and dusted and resolved and there's a judgment and we can all put it behind us, I mean, there'll probably be an appeal, but maybe they could tie up for a musical collaboration because I think it would be quite entertaining. A bit of back and forth on a track. Maybe that could be the happy outcome of this. And maybe Parlux could sponsor it. See, I'm just looking for ways to find a happy ending out of all of this.
Now, we promised an update on what's happening with post-Brexit touring for UK artists. And the update is that there is no update, except that the all-party parliamentary group for music last week called for urgent action from the government to tackle the crisis. As I think I said at the beginning, the time for urgent action really does seem to have passed. But there's clearly still a need for it because there has, as far as I can tell, been little to no action so far.
Yeah, now obviously we've talked about this a lot on Setlist. We've written about it even more in the CME Daily. I'm sure regular listeners, regular readers, you're sick to death of us covering this story. We're sick to death of covering it. But imagine how annoying it is for artists and crew members who just want to tour Europe like they used to pre-Brexit. But of course, all of this is a result of the post-Brexit trade agreement that was agreed by the United Kingdom and the European Union at the very end of 2020. That agreement did not include a provision to ensure that British artists could continue to tour the European Union without any new visa or permit or carne bureaucracy to tackle. That EU-wide provision was not in the trade agreement, despite the government here in the UK assuring the music community at various points it would definitely be in there. It was not As soon as everybody realised that, there was then a little bit of back and forth with the EU saying, well, we proposed that it go in there. This is the UK's fault. And the UK saying, no, we proposed that it go in there. It's the EU's fault. It then transpired that both sides had had proposals that the other side didn't like. Once it became clear that there was not going to be an EU-wide agreement on this, then the priority became, okay, what is the new bureaucracy that artists and crew members are now going to have to tackle? It differs from country to country because there's no EU-wide provision. The rules are different depending on which country you're touring in. In some countries, actually, if you're just popping in to do a few gigs over a couple of weeks, there may well be no new requirements. But in some countries, there are. And so earlier this year, eventually the UK government were like, okay, it is a bit of a problem that this isn't in the trade agreement. That's the EU's fault, by the way. But what can we do to tackle the issues that have been created? And actually, there are some things around so-called cabotage rules, which probably can only be done at an EU level. But some of the problems could be tackled by just reaching agreements with individual EU member states to get rid of the new bureaucracy that artists are having to face. Obviously, at the start of the year, there was the upside. It was one of the few upsides of the ongoing COVID pandemic because at the start of 2021, no one could tour Europe anyway. So there was this whole period where the industry was like, okay, this is a nightmare, but because of COVID, we've kind of got a free 6, 7, 8 month buffer. We didn't know it was going to be quite that long at the time, but we've got a buffer to sort all of this out. The government started to say, yeah, we'll sort this out. And then Prime Minister Boris Johnson in Parliament said, we're definitely sorting this out. That was the first indication that nothing was going to happen. And he was like, yeah, ministers are working on this. We're flat out to solve all of these problems. David Frost, the guy who actually negotiated the trade deal, he's on top of this. We're going to sort all of this out. But as far as we can see, and as far as everyone in the music industry who's been campaigning on this can see, and as far as MPs in Parliament can see, pretty much nothing has happened since Boris Johnson said that everyone was working flat out on this, except that the Department for Culture and Digital and Media and Sport, not in that order, I can never remember what they're called, they put out various statements in recent months saying, oh, it's fine in this country, kind of implying that some deal has been done behind the scenes, but pretty much all they've been doing is stating what we already knew, which is in some countries in Europe, even though we don't have this EU-wide provision, actually there aren't new permit or visa requirements for artists. So some countries are fine, but the key point is there are these countries where it's not fine, and there seems to be frustratingly little progress regarding those countries, or indeed offering other support, particularly to sort of lower level emerging newer artists who can't afford all of this new bureaucracy. It's frustrating. And so, as you say, even though all of this should have been addressed months ago, we now have this letter from the All-Party Parliamentary Group for Music in Parliament. So APPGs are informal groups of MPs in Parliament that come together around a common interest, in this case, music. And I guess what is interesting about APPGs is they are cross-party. So this is a group of MPs from all of the political parties in the UK, including some MPs who actually were pro-Brexit. And they are basically doing two things. One, they've written to Boris Johnson saying, you really need to sort this out like now. And secondly, they're going to do their own little inquiry in order to document just how problematic all of this is, particularly for newer and more niche British artists. And basically saying to everybody, if you have any simple solutions that might help with some of this, please propose it and we'll pass it on to the powers that be who have proven themselves, well, basically useless. But nevertheless, maybe this will help get some progress.
Yeah, so this letter to Boris Johnson came from David Warburton, MP, who is a Conservative MP. He's a Brexit voting MP. He's a long-standing anti-EU MP. But he said in this letter, at a meeting of the APPG on music that I chaired last week, it was made clear to me that while clarifications issued by the Department for Digital Culture, Media and Sport, there you go, confirming the general principle of visa-free working in 20 EU countries were welcome, there were still barriers and not enough clarity for musicians looking to tour the EU, particularly emerging artists. After noting the economic and cultural impacts of the UK music industry, as we discussed last week, MPs really do like to do, the letter asks Johnson to urgently commit to three things. Number one, practical unilateral steps to improve the situation, like creating a bespoke music export office to support UK artists looking to play abroad, then to intensify bilateral negotiations with states like Spain that bar work permit free touring, and finally look to forge an EU level agreement exempting cultural tours from the red tape designed to cover other areas of activity like haulage and formal immigration.
As we say, as well as writing that letter to Johnson, the APPG also announced that they're going to do their own inquiry into the impact that the post-Brexit bureaucracy is having on the UK music industry and music community. And to that end, MPs have said that they want to hear from musicians and people across the music industry with any sort of facts and figures about quite what it means if you're going to go and play in a country where there may be visa or permit or carné requirements or navigating the cabotage rules as you're driving yourself and your equipment across the continent. Plus, they are also interested, as I said, in anyone in the music community who has any solutions that have not already been proposed that maybe MPs and the government should be considering. So if you want to input on this, either if you go to the APPG's own website, or actually UK Music, the cross-sector lobbying group, also has the information on their website, and there are details about where you can submit your information, your experiences, if you want to contribute to this inquiry, in the hope that getting some more fat. I mean, quite a few industry groups have already got together quite a lot of good facts and figures, but maybe if it comes from a bunch of MPs, cross-party group of MPs in Parliament, maybe it might have an impact. Who knows? And I'm sure, I'm positive that Andy will put links to all of that in the notes to go with this edition of Setlist.
Yeah, I'm sure I will. And it remains to be seen what effect any of this latest campaigning on this issue has. I mean, I can't help feeling at this stage that it's kind of a losing battle. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just too cynical for my own good. And there is some breakthrough that can be made that makes the current government realise that this is an issue that needs working on. I mean, there's quite a lot of other issues that need working on that they've got as a result of Brexit as well. So we just have to see where it comes on the list, I suppose. But that's all we've got time for on this edition of Setlist. As Chris mentioned there, there are links to everything we've discussed on this episode in the show notes, which you will either find in your podcast player now or at setlistpodcast.com. Do remember to subscribe to the show to receive new episodes automatically if you have not already. Do remember to rate and review it. And if there's anything you want to talk to us about related to this episode of the show or anything else we've ever discussed, email us setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Moulton, Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.